And this is The Source on KSTX, a product of the Texas Public Radio Newsroom. I'm David Martin Davies. It was just yesterday that the White House accused China's military of mounting attacks on American government computer systems and defense contractors. We've seen the stock market go into a power dive recently when AP's Twitter account was hijacked by militants and they reported that the White House had been bombed and the president was injured. Water utilities across the nation have been told to be on alert after incidents where hackers gained access to computer systems that controlled pumps, pipes, and reservoirs. The cyber threat is real. It's here, and we've got to deal with it. We want to hear from you. What do you think about the cyber threat? How do we fight against it? Do you have questions about the cyber threat? Give us a call. The number is 614-8980. You can also email your questions and comments to the source at tpr.org. Go to the comments section on our website at tpr.org as well. Our guest this half hour, experts in the field of cybersecurity and getting communities ready to deal with the cyber threat, Gregory B. White. He's the director of the UTSA Center for Infrastructure Assurance and Security. And Larry Thompson, he's the associate director for the UTSA Center for Infrastructure Assurance and Security. Welcome to The Source.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So how real is this? How bad is it? I want you guys to wake me up. Based on reality, give me something that happened. What the worst case scenario? Larry, tell me what could go wrong.
Well, I mean, before you talk about what could go wrong, think about what you rely, how you rely on control systems, how you rely on computers, how you rely on the communications that are running throughout all of the cyber systems that you have. If you think about that first, then you think about the kind of things that can go wrong.
But many of us aren't even aware.
Certainly.
I mean, people think I turn the faucet and the water comes out. They don't realize there's a computer somewhere attached to that.
Absolutely. Industrial control systems that are running on computers that are providing the control of power and water, et cetera, et cetera. But also, don't forget about some of the bigger threats are to our financial system, our banking system, to our national defense, if you will, and then just kind of the running of the day-to-day operation of a community. I'll give you an example.
This is too intellectualizing. I need a hardcore.
Let me give you an example.
Okay.
A couple years ago, some people climbed down some manholes, pulled off the covers, climbed down some manholes, and cut some fiber. Sounds like it pretty innocuous, not really that big of a deal. It was a total of 8 fiber cuts. It was about 3 years ago. It was in the Silicon Valley. And the result of that was 911 systems were completely shut down for half of a day. The community found that they had no telephone system whatsoever. They had an AT&T fibers that were then leased to a lot of other companies, Sprint, Verizon, those kind of companies. What ended up happening was the fire department they would sit on rooftops. They were flying around in helicopters looking for smoke. Hospitals discovered that they couldn't communicate with anyone that they needed to communicate, and they had to send out runners to dispatch doctors to bring them to the hospitals, and Lord forbid, people couldn't get Starbucks using their Starbucks gift card because that system didn't work either.
So had someone coordinated a cut of those fiber cables with, say, something like the Boston Marathon bombing, where you had a hyper emergency going on and people were scrambling, and then we had a cutoff of communications, it would aggravate that attack all the more.
Absolutely. And the thing about that is what you bring up is what we would call a blended attack. And the idea of using the cyber systems and disabling or disrupting the cyber systems in the midst of doing something in the physical world like it happened in Boston is it can paint a pretty terrifying scenario, in fact.
All right. So let's talk. So Gregory B. White, you're the director of the UTSA Center for Infrastructure and Assurance and Security. What is the mission?
Basically, what we're interested in doing is going around the nation and helping states and communities develop viable and sustainable cybersecurity programs. So the kind of things that Larry just mentioned, the community would be ready for, so that if a disaster of some sort occurred, an entity or an organization or an individual who wants to use cyber techniques to impact the ability of the first responders to address that issue, they can address it because they prepared for it. They know what to expect. They know what their backup systems are. They know how to address a lack of cyber.
So you're telling the local communities, like small towns and counties and governments and what? Why do they need to get involved in this?
Well, if you think about it, everybody, whether it be a small town or a large metropolitan area, everybody relies on computers. As Larry was mentioning earlier, you're talking about the telecommunications, your telephone systems. You're talking about your power, your water. Every community has to worry about these things, so everybody needs to be concerned about them.
And so is this going to break the bank? I mean, it sounds like there's unlimited, infinite vulnerabilities that exist here. How do we protect against every possible attack?
It is kind of scary when you start looking at it. And if you try to protect against every possible attack, you're right, it's going to be very expensive. But what we're doing is we're going around and showing states and communities that you don't need to do that. You don't need to address that to begin with. To give you another example, in the state of South Carolina, they had an individual who clicked on an email, an attachment that they probably weren't supposed to, a link in that email. They ended up having some malware downloaded on their system, and a little while later, you know, the state of South Carolina lost 6.4 million records. They're still trying to recover from that, over $20 million.
How does that happen? I mean, just because a guy in the office clicks on the thing about whatever, and boom, they lose all these records. And
well, it's a little bit more complicated. If you take a look at the reports that came out of South Carolina, the initial individual or individuals that clicked on that first email attachment, it allowed for some malware to be installed on their system, which allowed then individuals to observe what it was that people were typing. So people were able to grab people's passwords, user IDs and passwords, and then come back in later on to steal the information. But if you can keep, and you know, back to my point about the first steps, if you can make people aware that this is the kind of thing that you need to worry about, to guard against, if we can keep our employees from clicking on those things, we're eliminating one of those easy avenues for people to get into our systems.
So what about the threat assessment? Larry Thompson, you're the Associate Director at the UTSA Center for Infrastructure Assurance and Security. Who's behind this? I mean, is there really a bad guy out there, a supervillain who's trying to hack into our systems and bring down our water supply?
There are a lot of villains out there, and the scale goes everybody from somebody that's just trying to see if they can get in, or they're trying to steal a little bit, to organized crime, to industrial espionage, to international espionage, to nation states that are trying to affect or disrupt the operation of one of their opposing states. So yeah, the spectrum is about as wide as you can imagine.
Well, looking at the White House report that was released yesterday, they talked about China doing mapping the cyber of the United States. So if there ever was a need for a takedown, they already had the intelligence that they needed to try and make that happen. So there are people testing the vulnerabilities and seeing what's out there. Is that right?
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. That's going on a daily basis across the nation.
Okay, we're going to get back to this topic and talk about what's happening in San Antonio, how San Antonio is on the tip of the spear making this. Give us a call if you've got a question or a comment on The Source, 614-8980. Welcome back to The Source on KSTX. We're talking about one of the greatest vulnerabilities we have in the United States today. It's our vulnerability to cyber attacks, not just your passwords and your credit card numbers, but it's also information about our government, our industries, and things that control things like reservoirs. Maybe someone across the planet could touch a button and could empty a Canyon Lake if they knew the right button to press, and if we didn't know how to protect against these attacks. Give us a call with information. The number is 614-8980. If you've got any questions or comments, anything that you want to know about cybersecurity in San Antonio, the number is 614-8980. With me on the line right now, we have Shane Curtis. He is the regional director of TASC, which is doing a ribbon cutting or opening tomorrow. What's happening over at TASC tomorrow?
Actually, we have Mayor Castro coming in to do a ribbon-cutting ceremony for our new facility. We've stood up about 80-person training center along with a state-of-the-art cybersecurity test lab, primarily focused at industrial security system testing.
So this is another focused part of cybersecurity, looking at protecting some of the nation's utilities against cyber attacks?
Yeah, it's utilities, but also it's really anything, to be honest with you, that is controlled over the internet. You know, as an example, it could be the the city power, city water, even such things as an aquarium based for protection of the fish and things that use the chemical dispersement type units.
And so what is this new training center? Who will you be training?
Primarily our own staff that's coming on board. We've teamed up actually with the Alamo Community Colleges to bring on new classes to our facility to train cyber analysts and cyber penetration testers.
So this is a growing industry, and we need to train people to be able to serve the needs.
That's correct.
And how fast is this growing?
Well, just as an example, over the last year, we have one contract that supports the Air Force on base, actually defending the Air Force network as a whole. We've increased our staff from 25 to 48 over the past year, so it's definitely a growing need. And you see some of the things, especially on the ICS, for ICS networks. I mean, it's become a quickly growing problem. I mean, we've had, I know earlier in the show you asked the question about, give me an example of some of the attacks. But, in November, it was in the news where South Houston sewer plant was attacked pretty hard by hackers, causing some issues there. We just had an attack on the Army Corps of Engineers, putting some of our dams at risk as well.
And that puts people at risk.
That's correct.
So this is serious business. This is not just a job, but we're really, this is the new front line.
Yeah, sure. Protecting critical infrastructure systems such as power, water, from cyber attacks, a high priority. Obviously, President Obama just recently released the presidential directive to make this happen in our cities. Utilities and critical networks are constantly under attack. Threat is persistent, always evolving.
Shane Curtis, thank you so much for calling in. He's the regional director of TASC. They're doing a new system, a new training center and laboratory that opened up in San Antonio tomorrow, demonstrate critical infrastructure protection solutions. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much.
All right, we got to go to the phones. Kevin is on the line. He wants to join us and talk about cybersecurity. Go ahead, Kevin. You're on The Source.
I had a question for your guests. I'd be curious to hear their opinions on distributed denial of service attacks or DDoS attacks. They're in the news a lot. You hear about the group Anonymous. You hear about a lot of smaller groups. A lot of it's done seemingly in protest, and they're crippling websites. Is this really an issue, or is this more of an internet nuisance? Is it just kind of the, I'm going to get in the way for a little while and make you notice me, and then it's over?
All right, Kevin, thank you for your question, and we'll go to our experts from the UTSA Infrastructure Assurance and Security Department. Go ahead, Gregory White.
I would say offhand that it can be both, a nuisance. For most people, it's just going to be a nuisance. Some of the large-scale distributed denial-of-service attacks, the ones like you're talking about with Anonymous, where they're attempting to attack some large entity, maybe an Amazon-size entity, that can be extremely important to them, can be extremely dangerous for them. But most of the larger companies have taken measures to be able to handle distributed denial-of-service attacks. Most smaller companies, if I have a small ma-pa shop-sized shop here in San Antonio and someone decides to launch a distributed denial-of-service attack against me, there's not much I'm going to be able to do at this point. But the larger entities, they take this into account. They know it's a possibility, and they take measures.
That's when, multiple computer sites will keep calling up your website over and over again and making it so that it's hyper-fast fashion so that a real user couldn't get in there to actually see what's going on your website. You just kind of crash it.
Either your website or send so many email messages your mail server can't handle it or anything along that line, or just tying up your network in a number of different ways.
Okay, so let's go back to the phones. Bill wants to join the conversation. Bill, welcome to The Source.
Hi, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, sir. You're on the air.
Yes, sir. I just think that we really need to consider very carefully what parts of our infrastructure we expose to the Internet. It's really convenient to be able to control everything remotely from any place in the world, but, the nuclear power plants, dams, things like that, our electric grid, do we actually need to expose those things to every IP address in the world? doesn't make a lot of sense.
Well, that's a good point, Bill, and we'll see what the experts have to say about that. So Larry Thompson, Associate Director, UTSA Center for Infrastructure Assurance and Security. Does Bill have a good idea here?
Bill, you're absolutely right. And the problem with that is that the further we move along with technology, the more we end up tying things to the Internet. And sometimes we don't even know we're tying them to the Internet. You just heard a little while ago about Mr. Curtis talking about industrial control systems. And I can tell you that a lot of times those designers endeavor to kind of air gap and prevent those systems from being anywhere near the wild, the public Internet. The problem is what they find is a lot of times people end up connecting it because of convenience or because something isn't working and they need to connect it. So what ends up happening is a lot of times the best laid plans of the engineers and the designers and the folks that have put this stuff together are defeated by, as you heard Dr. White say a little while ago, somebody just clicking on an email or somebody taking a USB drive and plugging into a computer system that actually isn't connected to the Internet.
Yeah, we've heard about people taking USB drives and just kind of throwing them out in the parking lot or whatever. And
we call them road apples.
Road apples. Okay, yeah. That's a new term for me. And you pick it up. Hey, I found myself a USB drive. It's my lucky day. You stick it in your computer to see what's on it. And before you know it, you've got a little program in there that's calling home with all of your information.
And you may not even know you just did that, in fact.
And is that possible with CDs as well?
Absolutely. And it started more with CDs, and now the CDs aren't very attractive. You see a CD in a parking lot, and unless it says something interesting on it, you're probably not going to put it in your computer. But if you see a nice-looking, lots of storage USB drive, you're going to say, hey, that's a good deal. I just found this.
But I'm certain the USB I bought at the store is clean?
You have a reasonable chance of that one being claimed, but none of us know what we don't know.
Well,
right?
There's a lot we don't know. We don't know who's trying to get us and how they're going to do it, but that's your job to find out and to protect us. And so what's the number one takeaway you want our audience to get from about cybersecurity in their lives?
I would say that cybersecurity, much like preventing forest fires, cybersecurity is everyone's business. Everybody needs to be involved. If you have a high-speed internet connection in your home, you need to be taking measures to make sure that you're not your system isn't broken into, but you're also don't become part of a larger network that someone's using to attack systems in San Antonio.
They can use my computer without me knowing it to do an attack, and it will come back to me. And we don't know who the original attacker is.
Exactly. That's part of that distributed denial of service.
So we all got to get up with the program here. Thank you guys for joining us on The Source today. Gregory White, Director of the UTSA Center for Infrastructure Assurance and Security. Larry Thompson, Associate Director. Thanks for being on The Source. And we'll be right back after this pledge break and the news. We're going to talk about the future of the Alamo.